Chapter 21. Miss Minton was staying at the Kaminskys. She had lost everything in the fire except her trunk of books, but with her butterfly money, she had bought a few things that she needed. Because the Kaminskys had been kind to her, she was determined to do her duty. So each morning she taught Olga and helped the Countess with her letters. The rest of the day, she searched for Maya. It was now a week since Maya had vanished. Miss Minton had always been thin, but now she looked like a walking skeleton. When she passed through the streets, people turned and looked at her anguished face. The Carter's servants, Tappy Furo and the others, had not returned. When they had news of the fire, old Lila had fallen ill with a raging fever, certain that they had killed Maya by leaving her. And they had then gone further into the forest to search for the medicine man who could help cure her. But Miss Minton went to talk to the Indians living along the river bank and by the docks. She searched the ruins of the bungalow again and again. She questioned river patrols and the people who came in on the ships in case Maya had lost her memory and wandered off. Many people wanted to help her, the Kaminskys, Sergei in particular, and the chief of police, the Holtmans, Madame de Champs from the dancing class, and the children who worked with her. In a short time, she had been in the Amazon. Maya had made many friends. But the person who stopped Minty losing her reason was Professor Glastonbury. Every morning, he left the museum in charge of his assistant, and he helped search for clues. The professor alone was certain that Maya was not dead. "There is always hope. There is always remains," he said, "when someone burns to death." "You mean bones or teeth?" asked Miss Minton. "That's what I mean," said the professor firmly. He worked with the chief of police and the count. He spent hours at the docks, and at least twice a day he came back to Miss Minton to check she had eaten or even slept. But when a week had passed, Miss Minton gave up hope. She had had as good as killed Maya by deserting her. Now she must cable Mr. Murray and tell him that Maya was dead. She put on her hat to go to the post office when the Kaminskys' maid showed in the professor. As soon as she saw his face, Miss Minton reached for a chair. "Is there?" she began. "Yes, there's news. A man in a trading canoe on the Agape saw the Arabella and he was certain that two children were aboard." Miss Minton looked around the Kaminskys' drawing room as though she was to find a powerful boat that she needed, ready and waiting. "I must go at once," she said. "We must go at once," said the professor. "The Countess begged her to wait for her husband's return. He could find you a good boat and crew." But waiting was something Miss Minton could not do. "I'm going to buy some supplies first thing. Things that Maya might need," said the professor. "I'll meet you at the docks in an hour." But when they reached the harbour, there was no boat to hire and no one to help them. It was midday. Everyone had gone home for lunch and for the afternoon sleep which followed it. "Well, we'll just have to steal one," said Miss Minton. Then they saw the boat they knew, the Carter's Launch, a spinach-coloured boat without a name. Gonzales had bought it down after the fire to sell and help the Carter's debts. "No one will miss it for a few days," said Miss Minton. "And if they do, it doesn't matter." She looked at the professor. "Can you manage her?" "I expect so," said the professor. He sighed, but he didn't try to stop her. It would have been like trying to stop an avalanche. "There seems to be enough wood stacked up for now." Miss Minton had already picked up her skirts, jumped aboard. Now she took up the book hook. And waited while the professor fed the furnace with wood and the engine sputtered into life. "If we find Maya," said Miss Minton as they set off, "I swear I'm going to give this boat a proper name." The journey they took up the Negro and into the Agape River was very different from the dreamy voyage Finn and Maya had made the week before. "Faster, we can go faster," Miss Minton kept saying. When their supply of wood ran low, she jumped ashore, grasping a machete which Furo had left with the others, and slashed her way through the undergrowth as though she had been born with a knife in her hand. Everything she had forbidden her pupils to do, she did herself now. thinking gloomy thoughts, going off into black daydreams. One minute she thought that Maya had died in the fire, and the children seen on the Arabella was an Indian girl who Finn had given a ride. The next minute she thought that it had to be Maya, but that she had not drowned, or she had reached the Zante who had killed her. Lots of thoughts rushed through her head. "You couldn't blame them if they'd turned savage," she said, "the way some of these tribes have been treated." "Yara was a very gentle soul," said the Professor, Finn's mother. "That was then," said Miss Minton. Professor left her alone and gave his mind to the boat. The launch was larger and faster than the Arabella, but this only meant that she needed more wood. He had taken off his shirt, his chest was covered in smuts, his face was crimson from the heat, but he pushed the boat like a mad magician. And when Miss Minton tried to make him sail on through the night, he put his foot down. "It's dangerous and foolish," he said. "If we run aground, we'll never get off her." So Miss Minton lay down in the cabin and the Professor lay down on the deck. And as soon as the first light came, Miss Minton made black coffee so strong it almost took the roof off their mouths, and then they were off again. "I was an idiot," she said, sitting in the stern with her hand on the tiller. "I should have stayed with Henry Harrington, who pushed puppies through wire mesh tennis courts, or Lavina and Fremantle, who plucked the wings off butterflies. Goodness knows, I've had enough awful children to look after, but Maya..." Then that they saw things the Professor would have loved to stop. A deserted hummingbird nest with two eggs no bigger than peas. A scarlet orchid which he knew was worth a lot of money. But Miss Minton could not bear him to halt the boat. Even if a giant sloth with long red hair had come lumbering down to the water's edge, she would have insisted on going on. But he did not let everything pass. "Do you have to go on calling me the Professor or Professor Glastonbury?" he complained when they had travelled 3 days. Miss Minton was steering, looking for signs of sandbanks or submerged rocks. "I don't know your Christian name," she said. The Professor blushed. "It's Neville," he admitted. Miss Minton turned to look at him. Oil-stained, unshaven, dripping with sweat, and woke up to what he was doing for her. "What's wrong with Neville?" she said. After that, they became calmer and more sensible. She opened some tins they had bought and she started to make proper meals. She even allowed herself to see the beauty of the river and remembered how once she had hoped to make a living as a naturalist. "You won't lose your job because of this?" she asked, coming away so suddenly. The Professor shrugged. "Probably not. But if I do, it doesn't matter much. I'd have to retire anyway in a couple of years, and I have a bit of money saved." He put another log of wood into the firebox. "I used to go on trips with a taverner. Sometimes I would make a living like this. It's not just collecting. People pay good money now to be shown the wildlife." He stared out over the water. "It was what I meant to do when I came out here, but my wife didn't care for travelling." They turned into the agape and soon afterwards saw a great snake, endlessly long, rustling through the leaves and dropping down into the dark water. "An anaconda," said the Professor. "Is it dangerous?" asked Miss Minton. "Not to us," said the Professor. "It's a good omen, the god of the water making himself known." "Then perhaps we will find her," said Miss Minton under her breath. "What do you mean to do with Maya then, when you find her?" the Professor asked that night. "Take her back to the Kaminskis and never let her out of my sight again," said Miss Minton. "She may not find it easy." "Why on earth not? The Kaminskis are the kindest people in the world." "Yes, but she has had a taste of freedom." "That's neither here nor there," snapped Miss Minton, whose corset was sticking into her back. "I've tasted freedom too," she found herself saying, "but I have to go back, and so does she." Now, they had to remember the route Finn had meant to take, but lack of sleep and anxiety were beginning to make them clumsy. And there was another worry. The draft of the carter's boat was greater than that of the Arabella. What if the river became too shallow for them to go on? By the fifth day, Miss Minton had secretly given up hope, and even the professor stopped trying to be cheerful. Then, just a week after they had set off, they rounded the bend and heard the bark of a dog.